Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Okay, so the Sustainable Diversion Limit Adjustment Mechanism, or the SDL adjustment, is a very complex piece of policy which was built into the Basin Plan. So the Murray-Darling Basin Plan is the Commonwealth Government legislation or plan which covers the management of the rivers in the Murray-Darling Basin. It's the piece of legislation that the Commonwealth Government uses essentially to step in over the states and say, we have a right to say how these waterways are managed. When they were preparing the Basin Plan, the Commonwealth Government had obviously, you know, to undertake negotiations with all the state governments who actually have the final say over how water is allocated within each state, had a negotiation with the states. The states had different ideas about what they wanted that final basin plan to look like. South Australia, being at the end of the system, the end of the Murray Mouth there, wanted to see a higher recovery of water for the environment. They wanted to see more flows come down through the lower Murray and into the lower lakes and the Coorong there, the estuary at the end of the system. On the other hand, some of the more upstream states, Victoria and New South Wales, wanted to see less water delivered back to the river. They have irrigation industries and irrigation communities around that mid-Murray area, so that they were pushing strongly to reduce the target for how much water would be recovered from consumptive use back to the environment. So there was a negotiation underway. As a political settlement or a political compromise, the government built this thing called the Sustainable Diversion Limit Adjustment Mechanism into the plan. So the SDL, the Sustainable Diversion Limit, is the amount of water, the volume of water that it has been decided you can sustainably remove from that river every year. Now, the way the SDL set was, you know, the SDL was set, you know, using science, but it was also influenced by socioeconomic imperatives as well, which is, you know, the consumptive use of water for irrigation. There's obviously, you know, there's a political conversation and a debate there between those rights holders and people who, you know, own entitlements of water and, you know, irrigation industries, and then I suppose other groups who are advocating for the rights of the environment, and then also Aboriginal groups who are advocating for the rights of First Nations to own and access water and restore the river to health. So the SDL adjustment mechanism basically said, if we can achieve equivalent environmental outcomes with less water, then we don't have to recover that water from irrigators, farmers and consumptive use. There's one side of the equation, which is referred to as supply measures. So these are, basically the argument is, if you can build a piece of infrastructure on a floodplain or in a red gum forest or a wetland and mimic a natural flood by using engineering solutions, so that might mean pumping the water in and holding it in a wetland using levees and regulators constructed on the wetland, then the argument is that you're achieving the same or equivalent environmental outcomes as you would if you had a natural flood that would require a lot more water flowing down the river. So the argument there is that if you can replicate that flood using infrastructure, that means you have to get less water back from consumptive users such as irrigators. That's the basis of the SDL adjustment mechanism is you can change the target for how much water will need to be recovered by using infrastructure and other mechanisms.
Well, how does that impact cultural flow then?
So, okay, that's a good question. So, at the moment, there are no cultural flows allocated within the Murray-Darling Basin. So, Mildren, back in 2007, produced the Echuca Declaration, which is a statement from First Nations articulating values around water and aspirations or rights to own and manage water entitlements. So, and the term cultural flows was developed to refer to those water entitlements that are owned and managed by Aboriginal nations for their own use and by their own direction for, could be cultural, could be social, economic, environmental outcomes. At the moment, Aboriginal people own, the estimate is less than 0.1% of water within the basin is owned by Aboriginal people. So we don't have any substantial cultural flows yet in the basin. The other side of that is that water that's owned by the Australian government, by the Commonwealth, which is owned and managed for the environment, so we call that, you know, environmental water or water for the environment, that's the water that was bought back from irrigators and from consumptive users to be managed to sustain the health of the river. That water can also deliver important cultural benefits as well. The decision that we saw in the Senate yesterday was to cut the target for recovering that environmental water by 605 billion litres, which is the equivalent of the entire volume of Sydney Harbour plus another 100 billion litres. So it's a large volume of water. So the Senate, the Australian Labor Party and the government agreed to a deal which would allow that amendment to go through, meaning that the target for recovering water has been cut by 600 billion litres. So that will have impact. One of our concerns is that will have impact on Aboriginal nations who have cultural values connected with those waterways. So the areas that this environmental water is used to sustain are also very culturally significant. They are the cultural hotspots for First Nations along the basin. These are the red gum forests, wetlands, billabongs, and floodplains where there's a high concentration of cultural values, cultural heritage, and ongoing management and custodial care by First Nations. So we are concerned that cut will certainly impact on cultural values.
Well, there's been a commitment made that between the federal government and Labor to support the recognition of Aboriginal water rights, but there doesn't seem to be too many water rights when you look at places like Wilcannia, who've actually don't have any water flow whatsoever through that part of the Darling River.
That's a great example. So, for example, we've all seen some of the impacts on the Lower Darling in the last few years with the increased frequency of those cease-to-flow events. So the river is, effectively the river is drying up and ceasing to flow much more regularly than it historically has, and that has huge impacts on Barkindji people who value the Barka, the Darling River, as a central aspect of their cultural identity, as well as a practical source of food and cultural resources. So, for example, if First Nations could acquire, if they could be supported to acquire a water entitlement on the Darling, they could use that and manage it to support their cultural outcomes. When there is a low flow event, or when there was a Commonwealth environmental water delivery, they could use that entitlement to boost that flow, get more flow down the river, connect up the river to billabongs and floodplains, or manage it however they saw fit to improve outcomes. At the moment, the Commonwealth government, as part of that agreement made between the ALP and the government, there was a commitment to $40 million of funding over 4 years to support Aboriginal ownership of water entitlements for cultural and economic purposes. That is a significant first step towards recognition of Aboriginal people's rights and interests in water. It's a first step, but there's still a long way to go. Water is a very expensive commodity in the basin. The price of water is in an upward trajectory. $40 million in this day and age actually doesn't buy you a lot of water. When we're talking about a population, Aboriginal, population over 70,000 people across the whole basin, $40 million is not going to achieve the sort of purchases necessary to equitably support the outcomes of a broad range of groups across the basin. But it is an important first step, and we really, really welcome that step, and we need to work towards demonstrating the success of that program and building that commitment in the future.
I'm interested for you to explain a little bit more about how water can be purchased back from individual states. I mean, for an Aboriginal person, understanding, a cultural flow, that it's not about the state line, and how does that make it difficult when it comes to buying water or monitoring how the water is managed?
Yeah, so what we're really talking about in modern-day Australia and in the modern-day Murray-Darling Basin is the imposition of a settler colonial property regime and a neoliberal market regime over what was a very complex, nuanced system of a cultural understanding and cultural connection to interconnected waterways that are living entities with their own spirit and the sort of right to exist. So it's really the imposition of a very restrictive and reductive market system over an ancient and much more nuanced and complex cultural understanding about waterways. So again, going back to the Echuca Declaration in 2007, the membership of MILDREN said, water is a living entity which has its own right to exist. We are seeing some important and interesting legal precedents in other parts of the world In New Zealand, for example, rivers have been granted legal personhood status. In Australia at the moment, we still treat those rivers, white governments still treat those rivers as essentially irrigation delivery systems. The way that the Murray River is managed and the way that a lot of the rivers in that system are managed are really to deliver water for irrigation. So they flow high in summer when water's being released for farmers downstream, and they flow low in winter when water's being held up in the dam. That's completely unnatural, and it's not the way that the system used to work. So we've really turned those rivers upside down in order to manage them for irrigation delivery. At the moment, all the water in the Murray, many systems in the Murray, we talk about a fully allocated system. That's a river system where all the water is owned by someone. The Lower Murray, for example, all the flows of water are owned either by private entitlement holders who might be irrigators or industry or consumptive users, or they're owned by government for environmental purposes. Water has been commodified and turned into a property right. I could jump online today onto a water trading website, you know, if I had the spare cash, and buy a water entitlement, which means that I become the owner of that entitlement. I could trade that entitlement. I could trade the annual allocation of that entitlement, so sort of like leasing my annual allocation out to another user. I could buy and trade and make money off that commodity. I guess the injustice of this, or one of the injustices of this, is that as that whole market has been developed over the last 20 years, Aboriginal people were not in a position to be able to participate equitably because of the legacy of, you know, colonialism and racism and segregation. They have never been able to enter that market on an equal playing field. The beneficiaries of that market system, the landholders and the big private investment firms that have bought water and, you know, seen their stocks in water increase in value, have, you know, they've benefited significantly from this market, the marketisation or the commodification of our water resources. Aboriginal people, who are the original custodians, traditional owners with a right to manage and cultural responsibilities to care for those waterways, have been sold out of that market. So the argument we've made consistently to the government is they need to fork out the money now to allow Aboriginal people to get back into that market and manage that water however they see fit.
It's really interesting. So what's the future now regarding Aboriginal water rights and the research on cultural flows? What's the aspirations for that?
So over the last 5 years, Mildren and our counterparts in the north, the Northern Basin Aboriginal Nations, have been leading a groundbreaking piece of research, an interdisciplinary research program called the National Cultural Flows Research Project. It is designed to secure a future where Aboriginal ownership of water is embedded in our water management and allocation framework. The research has developed a methodology, a rigorous methodology that allows First Nations to document their cultural values and specify their water requirements. So one of the things governments have always pushed back when First Nations have argued for greater recognition of their water rights is, oh, well, you don't know what you want the water for. You don't know how much water you want. All these kinds of, you know, questions that are thrown back to try and block progress in that space. So Mildren and NBAN went away with the support of Murray-Darling Basin Authority and other agencies. We went away and said, all right, well, let's do that research and create a tool that can allow nations to document that information. So there's one less barrier to achieving their rights and interests. So the Cultural Flows Research Project has developed a tool and a methodology that nations can use to go out on country, assess their watering requirements, and really then build the argument for an allocation of water to meet their needs, so cultural flows. So one thing, another positive commitment that's come out of the agreement this week was $1.5 million and some funding for positions to start implementing the findings of that research. That then goes on to contribute to the argument. So the argument for further funding to purchase, you know, to acquire water licenses for cultural use. The next steps for us are to get some clarity from the Commonwealth Government about how this funding that they have announced will be delivered and managed in the years to come. There is some concern from our membership. The proposal in the agreement was that the funding would be held by the Indigenous Land Corporation, the ILC. There is some concern from our membership as to whether that is the appropriate body to hold that funding. We think that there might be other better ways to do that. So we'll be progressing that conversation with the government. At the moment, we need to sit down with Minister Littleproud and just thrash out how that funding is going to be managed into the future.
Will Mooney, thank you so much for joining NITV Radio. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Kirsten.
This was an NITV Radio podcast. For more, visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio or download the SBS Radio app.